But look at him carefully. Look, come closer.
Harry had never heard Lucius Malfoy so excited.
Draco, if we are the ones who hand Potter over to the Dark Lord, everything will be forgiven. Now, we won't be forgetting who actually caught him, I hope, Mr. Malfoy, said Greyback menacingly. Of course not, of course not, said Lucius impatiently.
He approached Harry himself, came so close that Harry could see the usually languid pale face in sharp detail, even through his swollen eyes. With his face a puffy mask, Harry felt as though he was peering out from between the bars of a cage.
What did you do to him?
Lucius asked Greyback.
How did he get into this state?
That wasn't us.
Looks more like a stinging jinx to me, said Lucius.
His grey eyes raked Harry's forehead.
There's something there,
he whispered.
It could be the scar. Stretch tight. Draco, come here. Look properly. What do you think?
Harry saw Draco's face up close now, right beside his father's. They were extraordinarily alike, except that while his father looked beside himself with excitement, Draco's expression was full of reluctance, even fear.
I don't know,
he said, and he walked away toward the fireplace where his mother stood watching.
We had better be certain, Lucius,
Narcissa called to her husband in her cold, clear voice.
Completely sure that it is Potter, before we summon the Dark Lord. They say this is his.
She was looking closely at the blackthorn wand.
But it does not resemble Ollivander's description. If we are mistaken, if we call the Dark Lord here for nothing, remember what he did to Raoul and Dolohov.
What about the mudblood, then?
Growled Greyback. Harry was nearly thrown off his feet as the snatchers forced the prisoners to swivel around again so that the light fell on Hermione instead.
Wait,
said Narcissa sharply.
Yes, yes. She was in Madame Malkin's with Potter. I saw her picture in the Prophet. Look, Draco, isn't it the Granger girl?
Aye, maybe. Yeah. But then, that's the Weasley boy,
shouted Lucius, striding around the bound prisoners to face Ron.
It's them, Potter's friends. Draco, look at him. Isn't it Arthur Weasley's son? What's his name?
Yeah, said Draco again, his back to the prisoners. It could be.
The drawing room door opened behind Harry. A woman spoke, and the sound of the voice wound Harry's fear to an even higher pitch.
What is this? What's happened, Sissy?
Bellatrix Lestrange walked slowly around the prisoners and stopped on Harry's right, staring at Hermione through her heavily lidded eyes.
But surely,
she said quietly,
this is the Mudblood Girl. This is Granger.
Yes, yes, it's Granger, cried Lucius. And beside her, we think, Potter. Potter and his friends. Caught at last.
Potter!
Shrieked Bellatrix, and she backed away, the better to take in Harry.
Are you sure? Well then, the Dark Lord must be informed at once.
She dragged back her left sleeve. Harry saw the dark mark burned into the flesh of her arm, and knew that she was about to touch it, to summon her beloved master.
I was about to call him, said Lucius, and his hand actually closed upon Bellatrix's wrist, preventing her from touching the mark. I shall summon him, Bella. Potter has been brought to my house, and it is therefore upon my authority.
Your authority,
she sneered, attempting to wrench her hand from his grasp.
You lost your authority when you lost your wand, Lucius. How dare you? Take your hands off me.
This is nothing to do with you. You did not capture the boy. Begging your pardon, Mr. Malfoy,
interjected Greyback.
But it's us that caught Potter, and it's us that'll be claiming the gold.
Gold!
Laughed Bellatrix, still attempting to throw off her brother-in-law, her free hand groping in her pocket for her wand.
Take your gold, filthy scavenger! What do I want with gold? I seek only the honor of his... of...
She stopped struggling, her dark eyes fixed upon something Harry could not see. Jubilant at her capitulation, Lucius threw her hand from him and ripped up his own sleeve.
Stop!
Shrieked Bellatrix.
Do not touch it! We shall all perish if the Dark Lord comes now.
Lucius froze, his index finger hovering over his own mark. Bellatrix strode out of Harry's limited line of vision.
"What is that?"
he heard her say.
"Sword,"
grunted an out-of-sight snatcher.
"Give it to me. It's not yourn, missus. It's mine. I reckon I found it."
There was a bang and a flash of red light. Harry knew that the snatcher had been stunned. There was a roar of anger from his fellows. Scabbard drew his wand.
"What do you think you're playing at, woman?" "Stupefy!"
she screamed.
"Stupefy!"
They were no match for her, even though there were four of them against one of her. She was a witch, as Harry knew, with prodigious skill and no conscience. They fell where they stood, all except Greyback, who had been forced into a kneeling position, his arms outstretched. Out of the corners of his eyes, Harry saw Bellatrix bearing down upon the werewolf, the sword of Gryffindor gripped tightly in her hand, her face waxen.
"Where did you get this sword?"
she whispered to Greyback as she pulled his wand out of his unresisting grip.
"How dare you?"
he snarled, his mouth the only thing that could move as he was forced to gaze up at her. He bared his pointed teeth.
"Release me, woman." "Where did you find this sword?"
she repeated, brandishing it in his face.
"Snape sent it to my vault in Gringotts." "It was in their tent,"
rasped Greyback.
"Release me, I say."
She waved her wand, and the werewolf sprang to his feet, but appeared too wary to approach her. He prowled behind an armchair, his filthy curved nails clutching its back.
"Draco, move this scum outside," said Bellatrix, indicating the unconscious men. "If you haven't got the guts to finish them, then leave them in the courtyard for me." "Don't you dare speak to Draco like—"
said Narcissa furiously. But Bellatrix screamed,
"Be quiet! The situation is graver than you can possibly imagine, Sissy. We have a very serious problem."
She stood, panting slightly, looking down at the sword, examining its hilt. Then she turned to look at the silent prisoners.
"If it is indeed Potter, he must not be harmed,"
she muttered, more to herself than to the others.
"The Dark Lord wishes to dispose of Potter himself, but if he finds out, I must know."
She turned back to her sister again.
"The prisoners must be placed in the cellar while I think what to do. This is my house, Bella. You don't give orders in my—" "Do it! You have no idea of the danger we are in,"
shrieked Bellatrix. She looked frightening, mad. A thin stream of fire issued from her wand and burned a hole in the carpet. Narcissa hesitated for a moment, then addressed the werewolf.
"Take these prisoners down to the cellar, Greyback." "Wait!"
said Bellatrix sharply.
"All except for the mudblood."
Greyback gave a grunt of pleasure.
"No!"
shouted Ron.
"You can have me! Keep me!"
Bellatrix hit him across the face. The blow echoed around the room.
"If she dies under questioning, I'll take you next,"
she said.
"Blood traitor is next to mudblood in my book. Take them downstairs, Greyback, and make sure they are secure, but do nothing more to them yet."
She threw Greyback's wand back to him, then took a short silver knife from under her robes. She cut Hermione free from the other prisoners, then dragged her by the hair into the middle of the room, while Greyback forced the rest of them to shuffle across to another door, into a dark passageway, his wand held out in front of him, projecting an invisible and irresistible force.
"Reckon she'll let me have a bit of the girl when she's finished with her,"
Greyback crooned as he forced them along the corridor.
"I'd say I'll get a bite or two. Wouldn't you, Ginger?"
Harry could feel Ron shaking. They were forced down a steep flight of stairs, still tied back to back, and in danger of slipping and breaking their necks at any moment. At the bottom was a heavy door. Greyback unlocked it with a tap of his wand, then forced them into a dank and musty room, and left them in total darkness. The echoing bang of the slammed cellar door had not died away before there was a terrible, drawn-out scream from directly above them.
"Hermione!"
Ron bellowed, and he started to writhe and struggle against the ropes tying them together, so that Harry staggered.
"Hermione! Be quiet!" Harry said. "Shut up, Ron. We need to work out a way. Hermione!
Hermione! We need a plan. Stop yelling. We need to get these ropes off.
Harry? Came a whisper through the darkness.
Ron? Is that you?
Ron stopped shouting. There was a sound of movement close by them. Then Harry saw a shadow moving closer.
Harry? Ron?
Luna?
Yes, it's me. Oh, no. I didn't want you to be caught.
Luna, can you help us get these ropes off? Said Harry.
Oh, yes, I expect so. There's an old nail we use if we need to break anything. Just a moment.
Hermione screamed again from overhead, and they could hear Bellatrix screaming too. But her words were inaudible, for Ron shouted again, Hermione! Hermione!
Mr. Ollivander, Harry could hear Luna saying, Mr. Ollivander, have you got the nail? If you just move over a little bit, I think it was beside the water jug.
She was back within seconds.
You need to stay still, she said.
Harry could feel her digging at the rope's tough fibers to work the knots free. From upstairs, they heard Bellatrix's voice.
I'm going to ask you again. Where did you get this sword? Where?
We found it. We found it. Please.
Hermione screamed again. Ron struggled harder than ever, and the rusty nail slipped onto Harry's wrist.
Ron, please stay still, Luna whispered. I can't see what I'm doing.
My pocket. Said Ron.
In my pocket, there's a deluminator, and it's full of light.
A few seconds later, there was a click, and the luminescent spheres the deluminator had sucked from the lamps in the tent flew into the cellar. Unable to rejoin their sources, they simply hung there like tiny suns, flooding the underground room with light. Harry saw Luna, all eyes in her white face, and the motionless figure of Ollivander the Wandmaker curled up on the floor in the corner. Craning around, he caught sight of their fellow prisoners. Dean and Griphook the goblin, who seemed barely conscious, kept standing by the ropes that bound him to the humans.
Oh, that's much easier, thanks, Ron, said Luna, and she began hacking at their bindings again. Hello, Dean.
From above came Bellatrix's voice.
You are lying, filthy mudblood, and I know it. You have been inside my vault at Gringotts. Tell the truth! Tell the truth!
Another terrible scream.
Hermione! What else did you take? What else have you got? Tell me the truth or I swear I shall run you through with this knife!
There.
Harry felt the ropes fall away and turned, rubbing his wrists, to see Ron running around the cellar, looking up at the low ceiling, searching for a trapdoor. Dean, his face bruised and bloody, said,
Thanks!
To Luna, and stood there shivering. But Griphook sank onto the cellar floor, looking groggy and disoriented, many welts across his swarthy face. Ron was now trying to disapparate without a wand.
There's no way out, Ron, said Luna, watching his fruitless efforts. The cellar is completely escape-proof. I tried at first. Mr. Ollivander has been here for a long time. He's tried everything.
Hermione was screaming again. The sound went through Harry like physical pain. Barely conscious of the fierce prickling of his scar, he too started to run around the cellar, feeling the walls, for he hardly knew what, knowing in his heart that it was useless.
What else did you take? What else? Answer me, Crucio!
Hermione's screams echoed off the walls upstairs. Ron was half sobbing as he pounded the walls with his fists. And Harry, in utter desperation, seized Hagrid's pouch from around his neck and groped inside it. He pulled out Dumbledore's snitch and shook it, hoping for he did not know what. Nothing happened. He waved the broken halves of the phoenix wand, but they were lifeless. The mirror fragment fell sparkling to the floor, and he saw a gleam of brightest blue. Dumbledore's eye was gazing at him out of the mirror.
Help us! He yelled at it in mad desperation. We're in the cellar of Malfoy Manor! Help us!
The eye blinked and was gone. Harry was not even sure that it had really been there. He tilted the shard of mirror this way and that, and saw nothing reflected there but the walls and ceiling of their prison. And upstairs, Hermione was screaming worse than ever, and next to him, Ron was bellowing,
Hermione!
Hermione! How did you get into my vault?
They heard Bellatrix scream.
Did that dirty little goblin in the cellar help you?
We only met him tonight,
Hermione sobbed.
We've never been inside your vault. It isn't the real sword. It's a copy. Just a copy.
A copy!
Screeched Bellatrix.
Oh, a likely story.
But we can find out easily, came Lucius's voice. Draco, fetch the goblin. He can tell us whether the sword is real or not.
Harry dashed across the cellar to where Griphook was huddled on the floor.
Griphook,
he whispered into the goblin's pointed ear.
You must tell them that sword's a fake. They mustn't know it's the real one. Griphook, please.
He could hear someone scuttling down the cellar steps. Next moment, Draco's shaking voice spoke from behind the door.
Stand back. Line up against the back wall. Don't try anything, or I'll kill you.
They did as they were bidden. As the lock turned, Ron clicked the deluminator, and the lights whisked back into his pocket, restoring the cellar's darkness. The door flew open. Malfoy marched inside, wand held out in front of him, pale and determined. He seized the little goblin by the arm and backed out again, dragging Griphook with him. The door slammed shut, and at the same moment a loud crack echoed inside the cellar. Ron clicked the deluminator. Three balls of light flew back into the air from his pocket, revealing Dobby, the house elf, who had just apparated into their midst.
Dob!
Harry hit Ron on the arm to stop him shouting, and Ron looked terrified at his mistake. Footsteps crossed the ceiling overhead, Draco marching Griphook to Bellatrix. Dobby's enormous tennis ball-shaped eyes were wide. He was trembling from his feet to the tips of his ears. He was back in the home of his old masters, and it was clear that he was petrified.
Harry Potter,
he squeaked in the tiniest quiver of a voice.
Dobby has come to rescue you.
But how did you...
An awful scream drowned Harry's words. Hermione was being tortured again. He cut to the essentials.
You can disapparate out of this cellar? He asked Dobby, who nodded, his ears flapping. And you can take humans with you?
Dobby nodded again.
Right! Dobby, I want you to grab Luna, Dean, and Mr. Ollivander, and take them to...
Bill and Fleur's, said Ron.
Shell Cottage, on the outskirts of Tinworth.
The elf nodded for a third time.
And then come back, said Harry. Can you do that, Dobby?
Of course, Harry Potter,
whispered the little elf. He hurried over to Mr. Ollivander, who appeared to be barely conscious. He took one of the wand maker's hands in his own, then held out the other to Luna and Dean, neither of whom moved.
Harry, we want to help you,
Luna whispered.
We can't leave you here, said Dean.
Go, both of you. We'll see you at Bill and Fleur's.
As Harry spoke, his scar burned worse than ever, and for a few seconds he looked down, not upon the wand-maker, but on another man who was just as old, just as thin, but laughing scornfully.
Kill me then, Voldemort! I welcome death, but my death will not bring you what you seek. There is so much you do not understand.
He felt Voldemort's fury, but as Hermione screamed again, he shut it out, returning to the cellar and the horror of his own present.
Go! Harry beseeched Luna and Dean. Go! We'll follow. Just go.
They caught hold of the elf's outstretched fingers. There was another loud crack, and Dobby, Luna, Dean, and Ollivander vanished.
What was that?
Shouted Lucius Malfoy from over their heads.
Did you hear that? What was that noise in the cellar?
Harry and Ron stared at each other.
Draco? No, call Wormtail. Make him go and check.
Footsteps crossed the room overhead. Then there was silence. Harry knew that the people in the drawing room were listening for more noises from the cellar.
We're going to have to try and tackle him,
he whispered to Ron. They had no choice. The moment anyone entered the room and saw the absence of three prisoners, they were lost.
Leave the lights on,
Harry added, and as they heard someone descending the steps outside the door, they backed against the wall on either side of it.
Stand back,
came Wormtail's voice.
Stand away from the door. I am coming in.
The door flew open. For a split second, Wormtail gazed into the apparently empty cellar, ablaze with light from the three miniature suns floating in midair. Then Harry and Ron launched themselves upon him. Ron seized Wormtail's wand arm and forced it upward. Harry slapped a hand to his mouth, muffling his voice. Silently they struggled. Wormtail's wand emitted sparks. His silver hand closed around Harry's throat.
"What is it, Wormtail?"
called Lucius Malfoy from above.
"Nothing,"
Ron called back in a passable imitation of Wormtail's wheezy voice.
"All fine."
Harry could barely breathe.
"You're going to kill me?"
Harry choked, attempting to prise off the metal fingers.
"After I saved your life, you owe me, Wormtail!"
The silver fingers slackened. Harry had not expected it. He wrenched himself free, astonished, keeping his hand over Wormtail's mouth. He saw the rat-like man's small, watery eyes widen with fear and surprise. He seemed just as shocked as Harry at what his hand had done, at the tiny, merciful impulse it had betrayed, and he continued to struggle more powerfully, as though to undo that moment of weakness.
"And we'll have that!"
whispered Ron, tugging Wormtail's wand from his other hand. Wandless, helpless, Pettigrew's pupils dilated in terror. His eyes had slid from Harry's face to something else. His own silver fingers were moving inexorably toward his own throat.
"No!"
Without pausing to think, Harry tried to drag back the hand, but there was no stopping it. The silver tool that Voldemort had given his most cowardly servant had turned upon its disarmed and useless owner. Pettigrew was reaping his reward for his hesitation, his moment of pity. He was being strangled before their eyes.
"No!"
Ron had released Wormtail too, and together he and Harry tried to pull the crushing metal fingers from around Wormtail's throat, but it was no use. Pettigrew was turning blue.
"Relatio!"
said Ron, pointing the wand at the silver hand. But nothing happened. Pettigrew dropped to his knees, and at the same moment, Hermione gave a dreadful scream from overhead. Wormtail's eyes rolled upward in his purple face. He gave a last twitch, and was still. Harry and Ron looked at each other, then, leaving Wormtail's body on the floor behind them, ran up the stairs and back into the shadowy passageway leading to the drawing room. Cautiously, they crept along it until they reached the drawing room door, which was ajar. Now they had a clear view of Bellatrix looking down at Griphook, who was holding Gryffindor's sword in his long-fingered hands. Hermione was lying at Bellatrix's feet. She was barely stirring.
"Well,"
Bellatrix said to Griphook,
"is it the true sword?"
Harry waited, holding his breath, fighting against the prickling of his scar.
"No,"
said Griphook.
"It is a fake."
"Are you sure?"
panted Bellatrix.
"Quite sure."
"Yes,"
said the goblin. Relief broke across her face, all tension drained from it.
"Good,"
she said, and with a casual flick of her wand, she slashed another deep cut into the goblin's face, and he dropped with a yell at her feet. She kicked him aside.
"And now,"
she said in a voice that burst with triumph,
"we call the Dark Lord."
And she pushed back her sleeve and touched her forefinger to the dark mark. At once Harry's scarf felt as though it had split open again. His true surroundings vanished. He was Voldemort, and the skeletal wizard before him was laughing toothlessly at him. He was enraged at the summons he felt. He had warned them, he had told them to summon him for nothing less than Potter. If they were mistaken...
"Kill me then,"
demanded the old man.
"You will not win, you cannot win. That wand will never, ever be yours."
And Voldemort's fury broke. A burst of green light filled the prison room, and the frail old body was lifted from its hard bed, and then fell back, lifeless. And Voldemort returned to the window, his wrath barely controllable. They would suffer his retribution if they had no good reason for calling him back.
"And I think,"
said Bellatrix's voice,
"we can dispose of the mudblood. Greyback,
Take her, if you want her. Now!
Ron had burst into the drawing room. Bellatrix looked around, shocked. She turned her wand to face Ron instead.
It's Pelliarmus!
He roared, pointing Wormtail's wand at Bellatrix, and hers flew into the air and was caught by Harry, who had sprinted after Ron. Lucius, Narcissa, Draco, and Greyback wheeled about. Harry yelled, "Stupefy!" and Lucius Malfoy collapsed onto the hearth. Jets of light flew from Draco's, Narcissa's, and Greyback's wands. Harry threw himself to the floor, rolling behind a sofa to avoid them.
"Stop or she dies!"
Panting, Harry peered around the edge of the sofa. Bellatrix was supporting Hermione, who seemed to be unconscious and was holding her short silver knife to Hermione's throat.
"Drop your wands,"
she whispered.
"Drop them, or we'll see exactly how filthy her blood is."
Ron stood rigid, clutching Wormtail's wand. Harry straightened up, still holding Bellatrix's.
"I said drop them,"
she screeched, pressing the blade into Hermione's throat. Harry saw beads of blood appear there.
"All right,"
he shouted, and he dropped Bellatrix's wand onto the floor at his feet. Ron did the same with Wormtail's. Both raised their hands to shoulder height.
"Good,"
she leered.
"Draco, pick them up. The Dark Lord is coming, Harry Potter. Your death approaches."
Harry knew it. His scar was bursting with the pain of it, and he could feel Voldemort flying through the sky from far away, over a dark and stormy sea, and soon he would be close enough to apparate to them, and Harry could see no way out.
"Now,"
said Bellatrix softly, as Draco hurried back to her with the wands.
"Sissy, I think we ought to tie these little heroes up again, while Greyback takes care of Miss Mudblood. I'm sure the Dark Lord will not begrudge you the girl, Greyback, after what you have done tonight."
At the last word, there was a peculiar grinding noise from above. All of them looked upward in time to see the crystal chandelier tremble. Then, with a creak and an ominous jingling, it began to fall. Bellatrix was directly beneath it. Dropping Hermione, she threw herself aside with a scream. The chandelier crashed to the floor in an explosion of crystal and chains, falling on top of Hermione and the goblin, who still clutched the sword of Gryffindor. Glittering shards of crystal flew in all directions. Draco doubled over, his hands covering his bloody face. As Ron ran to pull Hermione out of the wreckage, Harry took his chance. He leapt over an armchair and wrested the three wands from Draco's grip, pointed all of them at Greyback, and yelled,
"Stupefy!"
The werewolf was lifted off his feet by the triple spell, flew up to the ceiling, and then smashed to the ground. As Narcissa dragged Draco out of the way of further harm, Bellatrix sprang to her feet, her hair flying as she brandished the silver knife. But Narcissa had directed her wand at the doorway.
"Dobby!"
she screamed, and even Bellatrix froze.
"You! You drop the chandelier!"
The tiny elf trotted into the room, his shaking finger pointing at his old mistress.
"You must not hurt Harry Potter!"
he squeaked.
"Kill him, Sissy!"
shrieked Bellatrix, but there was another loud crack, and Narcissa's wand too flew into the air and landed on the other side of the room.
"You dirty little monkey!"
bawled Bellatrix.
"How dare you take a witch's wand? How dare you defy your masters?"
"Dobby has no master!"
squealed the elf.
"Dobby is a free elf, and Dobby has come to save Harry Potter and his friends."
Harry's scar was blinding him with pain. Dimly he knew that they had moments, seconds, before Voldemort was with them.
"Ron, catch, and go!"
he yelled, throwing one of the wands to him. Then he bent down to tug Griphook out from under the chandelier. Hoisting the groaning goblin who still clung to the sword over one shoulder, Harry seized Dobby's hand and spun on the spot to disapparate. As he turned into darkness, he caught one last view of the drawing room, of the pale, frozen figures of Narcissa and Draco, of the streak of red that was Ron's hair, and a blur of flying silver as Bellatrix's knife flew across the room at the place where he was vanishing.
Bill and Fleur's Shell Cottage. Bill and Fleur's.
He had disappeared into the unknown. All he could do was repeat the name of the destination and hope that it would suffice to take him there. The pain in his forehead pierced him, and the weight of the goblin bore down upon him. He could feel the blade of Gryffindor's sword bumping against his back. Dobby's hand jerked in his. He wondered whether the elf was trying to take charge, to pull them in the right direction, and tried, by squeezing the fingers, to indicate that that was fine with him. And then they hit solid earth and smelled salty air. Harry fell to his knees, relinquished Dobby's hand, and attempted to lower Griphook gently to the ground. "Are you all right?" he said as the goblin stirred, but Griphook merely whimpered. Harry squinted around through the darkness. There seemed to be a cottage a short way away, under the wide starry sky, and he thought he saw movement outside it.
"Dobby, is this Shell Cottage?"
he whispered, clutching the two wands he had brought from the Malfoys, ready to fight if he needed to.
"Have we come to the right place? Dobby?"
He looked around. The little elf stood feet from him.
"Dobby!"
The elf swayed slightly, stars reflected in his wide, shining eyes. Together, he and Harry looked down at the silver hilt of the knife protruding from the elf's heaving chest.
"Dobby! No!
Help!"
Harry bellowed toward the cottage, toward the people moving there.
"Help!"
He did not know or care whether they were wizards or muggles, friends or foes. All he cared about was that a dark stain was spreading across Dobby's front, and that he had stretched out his thin arms to Harry with a look of supplication. Harry caught him and laid him sideways on the cool grass.
"Dobby? No. Don't die. Don't die."
The elf's eyes found him, and his lips trembled with the effort to form words.
"Harry Potter."
And then, with a little shudder, the elf became quite still, and his eyes were nothing more than great glassy orbs, sprinkled with light from the stars they could not see. Chapter 24. The Wand Maker. It was like sinking into an old nightmare. For an instant, Harry knelt again beside Dumbledore's body at the foot of the tallest tower at Hogwarts. But in reality, he was staring at a tiny body curled upon the grass, pierced by Bellatrix's silver knife. Harry's voice was still saying, "Dobby, Dobby," even though he knew that the elf had gone where he could not call him back. After a minute or so, he realized that they had, after all, come to the right place, for here were Bill and Fleur, Dean and Luna, gathering around him as he knelt over the elf.
"Hermione," he said suddenly, "where is she?" "Ron's taken her inside," said Bill. "She'll be all right."
Harry looked back down at Dobby. He stretched out a hand and pulled the sharp blade from the elf's body, then dragged off his own jacket and covered Dobby in it like a blanket. The sea was rushing against rocks somewhere nearby. Harry listened to it while the others talked, discussing matters in which he could take no interest, making decisions. Dean carried the injured Griphook into the house, Fleur hurrying with them. Now Bill was making suggestions about burying the elf. Harry agreed without really knowing what he was saying. As he did so, he gazed down at the tiny body, and his scar prickled and burned. And in one part of his mind, viewed as if from the wrong end of a long telescope, he saw Voldemort punishing those they had left behind at Malfoy Manor. His rage was dreadful, and yet Harry's grief for Dobby seemed to diminish it, so that it became a distant storm that reached Harry from across a vast, silent ocean. "I want to do it properly," were the first words of which Harry was fully conscious of speaking. "Not by magic. Have you got a spade?" And shortly afterward, he had set to work alone, digging the grave in the place that Bill had shown him at the end of the garden, between bushes. He dug with a kind of fury, relishing the manual work, glorying in the non-magic of it, for every drop of his sweat and every blister felt like a gift to the elf who had saved their lives. His scar burned, but he was master of the pain. He felt it, yet was apart from it. He had learned control at last, learned to shut his mind to Voldemort, the very thing Dumbledore had wanted him to learn from Snape. Just as Voldemort had not been able to possess Harry while Harry was consumed with grief for Sirius, so his thoughts could not penetrate Harry now while he mourned Dobby. Grief, it seemed, drove Voldemort out, though Dumbledore, of course, would have said that it was love. On Harry dug, deeper and deeper into the hard, cold earth, subsuming his grief in sweat, denying the pain in his scar. In the darkness, with nothing but the sound of his own breath and the rushing sea to keep him company, the things that had happened at the Malfoys returned to him. The things he had heard came back to him, and understanding blossomed in the darkness. The steady rhythm of his arms beat time with his thoughts. Hallows. Horcruxes. Hallows. Horcruxes. Yet he no longer burned with that weird, obsessive longing. Loss and fear had snuffed it out. He felt as though he had been snapped awake again. Deeper and deeper Harry sank into the grave, and he knew where Voldemort had been tonight, and whom he had killed in the topmost cell of Nurmengard, and why. And he thought of Wormtail, dead because of one small unconscious impulse of mercy. Dumbledore had foreseen that. How much more had he known? Harry lost track of time. He knew only that the darkness had lightened a few degrees when he was rejoined by Ron and Dean. "How's Hermione?"
"Better," said Ron. "Fleur's looking after her."
Harry had his retort ready for when they asked him why he had not simply created a perfect grave with his wand, but he did not need it. They jumped down into the hole he had made, with spades of their own, and together they worked in silence until the hole seemed deep enough. Harry wrapped the elf more snugly in his jacket. Ron sat on the edge of the grave and stripped off his shoes and socks, which he placed upon the elf's bare feet. Dean produced a woolen hat, which Harry placed carefully upon Dobby's head, muffling his bat-like ears.
"We should close his eyes."
Harry had not heard the others coming through the darkness. Bill was wearing a traveling cloak, Fleur a large white apron, from the pocket of which protruded a bottle of what Harry recognized to be Skellagrow. Hermione was wrapped in a borrowed dressing gown, pale and unsteady on her feet. Ron put an arm around her when she reached him. Luna, who was huddled in one of Fleur's coats, crouched down and placed her fingers tenderly upon each of the elf's eyelids, sliding them over his glassy stare.
"There," she said softly. "Now he could be sleeping."
Harry placed the elf into the grave, arranged his tiny limbs so that he might have been resting, then climbed out and gazed for the last time upon the little body. He forced himself not to break down as he remembered Dumbledore's funeral, and the rows and rows of golden chairs, and the Minister of Magic in the front row, and the recitation of Dumbledore's achievements, the stateliness of the white marble tomb. He felt that Dobby deserved just as grand a funeral, and yet here the elf lay between bushes in a roughly dug hole.
"I think we ought to say something," piped up Luna. "I'll go first, shall I?"
And as everybody looked at her, she addressed the dead elf at the bottom of the grave.
"Thank you so much, Dobby, for rescuing me from that cellar. It's so unfair that you had to die when you were so good and brave. I'll always remember what you did for us. I hope you're happy now."
She turned and looked expectantly at Ron, who cleared his throat and said in a thick voice,
"Yeah, thanks, Dobby."
"Thanks," muttered Dean.
Harry swallowed.
"Goodbye, Dobby," he said.
It was all he could manage, but Luna had said it all for him. Bill raised his wand, and the pile of earth beside the grave rose up into the air and fell neatly upon it, a small reddish mound.
"Do you mind if I stay here a moment?" he asked the others.
They murmured words he did not catch. He felt gentle pats upon his back, and then they all traipsed back toward the cottage, leaving Harry alone beside the elf. He looked around. There were a number of large white stones, smoothed by the sea, marking the edge of the flower beds.
He picked up one of the largest and laid it pillow-like over the place where Dobby's head now rested. He then felt in his pocket for a wand. There were two in there. He had forgotten, lost track. He could not now remember whose wands these were. He seemed to remember wrenching them out of someone's hand. He selected the shorter of the two, which felt friendlier in his hand, and pointed it at the rock. Slowly, under his murmured instruction, deep cuts appeared upon the rock's surface. He knew that Hermione could have done it more neatly and probably more quickly, but he wanted to mark the spot as he had wanted to dig the grave. When Harry stood up again, the stone read, "Here lies Dobby, a free elf." He looked down at his handiwork for a few more seconds, then walked away, his scar still prickling a little, and his mind full of those things that had come to him in the grave, ideas that had taken shape in the darkness, ideas both fascinating and terrible. They were all sitting in the living room when he entered the little hall, their attention focused upon Bill, who was talking. The room was light-colored, pretty, with a small fire of driftwood burning brightly in the fireplace. Harry did not want to drop mud upon the carpet, so he stood in the doorway, listening.
"Lucky that Ginny's on holiday. If she'd been at Hogwarts, they could have taken her before we reached her. Now we know she's safe, too."
He looked around and saw Harry standing there.
"I've been getting them all out of the burrow," he explained. "Move them to Muriel's. The Death Eaters know Ron's with you now. They're bound to target the family. Don't apologize," he added at the sight of Harry's expression. "It was always a matter of time. Dad's been saying so for months. We're the biggest blood traitor family there is."
"How are they protected?" asked Harry.
"Fidelius Charm, Dad's secret keeper. And we've done it on this cottage too. I'm secret keeper here. None of us can go to work, but that's hardly the most important thing now. Once Ollivander and Griphook are well enough, we'll move them to Muriel's too. There isn't much room here, but she's got plenty. Griphook's legs are on the mend. Fleur's given him Skellagrow. We could probably move them in an hour or..."
"No," Harry said, and Bill looked startled.
"I need both of them here. I need to talk to them. It's important."
He heard the authority in his own voice, the conviction, the sense of purpose that had come to him as he dug Dobby's grave. All of their faces were turned toward him, looking puzzled.
"I'm going to wash," Harry told Bill, looking down at his hands still covered in mud and Dobby's blood. "Then I'll need to see them, straight away."
He walked into the little kitchen, to the basin beneath a window overlooking the sea. Dawn was breaking over the horizon, shell pink and faintly gold, as he washed, again following the train of thought that had come to him in the dark garden. Dobby would never be able to tell them who had sent him to the cellar, but Harry knew what he had seen. A piercing blue eye had looked out of the mirror fragment, and then help had come.
"Help will always be given at Hogwarts to those who ask for it."
Harry dried his hands, impervious to the beauty of the scene outside the window and to the murmuring of the others in the sitting room. He looked out over the ocean and felt closer this dawn than ever before, closer to the heart of it all. And still his scar prickled, and he knew that Voldemort was getting there too. Harry understood and yet did not understand. His instinct was telling him one thing, his brain quite another. The Dumbledore in Harry's head smiled, surveying Harry over the tips of his fingers, pressed together as if in prayer.
"You gave Ron the Deluminator. You understood him. You gave him a way back. And you understood Wormtail, too. You knew there was a bit of regret there, somewhere. And if you knew them, what did you know about me, Dumbledore? Am I meant to know, but not to seek? Did you know how hard I'd find that? Is that why you made it this difficult, so I'd have time to work that out?"
Harry stood quite still, eyes glazed, watching the place where a bright gold rim of dazzling sun was rising over the horizon. Then he looked down at his clean hands and was momentarily surprised to see the cloth he was holding in them. He set it down and returned to the hall. And as he did so, he felt his scar pulse angrily, and there flashed across his mind, swift as the reflection of a dragonfly over water, the outline of a building he knew extremely well. Bill and Fleur were standing at the foot of the stairs.
"I need to speak to Griphook and Ollivander," Harry said.
"No," said Fleur. "You will have to wait, Harry. They are both ill, tired."
"I'm sorry," he said without heat, "but it can't wait. I need to talk to them now, privately and separately. It's urgent."
"Harry, what the hell's going on?" asked Bill. "You turn up here with a dead house elf and a half-conscious goblin. Hermione looks as though she's been tortured, and Ron's just refused to tell me anything."
"We can't tell you what we're doing," said Harry flatly.
"You're in the Order, Bill. You know Dumbledore left us a mission. We're not supposed to talk about it to anyone else."
Fleur made an impatient noise, but Bill did not look at her. He was staring at Harry. His deeply scarred face was hard to read. Finally, Bill said,
"All right. Who do you want to talk to first?"
Harry hesitated. He knew what hung on his decision. There was hardly any time left. Now was the moment to decide. Horcruxes or Hallows?
"Griphook," Harry said. "I'll speak to Griphook first."
His heart was racing as if he had been sprinting and had just cleared an enormous obstacle.
"Up here, then," said Bill, leading the way.
Harry had walked up several steps before stopping and looking back.
"I need you two as well,"
he called to Ron and Hermione, who had been skulking, half-concealed, in the doorway of the sitting room. They both moved into the light, looking oddly relieved.
"How are you?" Harry asked Hermione.
"You were amazing, coming up with that story when she was hurting you like that."
Hermione gave a weak smile as Ron gave her a one-armed squeeze.
"What are we doing now, Harry?"
he asked.
"You'll see. Come on."
Harry, Ron, and Hermione followed Bill up the steep stairs onto a small landing. Three doors led off it.
"In here,"
said Bill, opening the door into his and Fleur's room. It too had a view of the sea, now flecked with gold in the sunrise. Harry moved to the window, turned his back on the spectacular view, and waited, his arms folded, his scar prickling. Hermione took the chair beside the dressing table. Ron sat on the arm. Bill reappeared, carrying the little goblin, whom he set down carefully upon the bed. Griphook grunted thanks, and Bill left, closing the door upon them all.
"I'm sorry to take you out of bed," said Harry. "How are your legs?"
"Painful,"
replied the goblin.
"But mending."
He was still clutching the sword of Gryffindor and wore a strange look, half truculent, half intrigued. Harry noted the goblin's sallow skin, his long, thin fingers, his black eyes. Fleur had removed his shoes. His long feet were dirty. He was larger than a house elf, but not by much. His domed head was much bigger than a human's.
"You probably don't remember," Harry began.
"That I was the goblin who showed you to your vault the first time you ever visited Gringotts,"
said Griphook.
"I remember, Harry Potter. Even amongst goblins, you are very famous."
Harry and the goblin looked at each other, sizing each other up. Harry's scar was still prickling. He wanted to get through this interview with Griphook quickly, and at the same time was afraid of making a false move. While he tried to decide on the best way to approach his request, the goblin broke the silence.
"You buried the elf,"
he said, sounding unexpectedly rancorous.
"I watched you from the window of the bedroom next door."
"Yes," said Harry.
Griphook looked at him out of the corners of his slanting black eyes.
"You are an unusual wizard, Harry Potter."
"In what way?" asked Harry, rubbing his scar absently.
"You dug the grave."
"So?"
Griphook did not answer. Harry rather thought he was being sneered at for acting like a muggle, but it did not much matter to him whether Griphook approved of Dobby's grave or not. He gathered himself for the attack.
"Griphook, I need to ask..."
"You also rescued a goblin."
"What?"
"You brought me here, saved me."
"Well, I take it you're not sorry," said Harry a little impatiently.
"No, Harry Potter,"
said Griphook, and with one finger he twisted the thin black beard upon his chin.
"But you are a very odd wizard."
"Right,"
said Harry. Well, I need some help, Griphook, and you can give it to me. The goblin made no sign of encouragement, but continued to frown at Harry, as though he had never seen anything like him. I need to break into a Gringotts vault. Harry had not meant to say it so baldly. The words were forced from him as pain shot through his lightning scar, and he saw again the outline of Hogwarts. He closed his mind firmly. He needed to deal with Griphook first. Ron and Hermione were staring at Harry as though he had gone mad.
Harry, said Hermione, but she was cut off by Griphook.
Break into a Gringotts vault?
Repeated the goblin, wincing a little as he shifted his position upon the bed.
It is impossible.
No, it isn't,
Ron contradicted him.
It's been done.
Yeah, said Harry, the same day I first met you, Griphook. My birthday, 7 years ago.
The vault in question was empty at the time,
snapped the goblin. And Harry understood that even though Griphook had left Gringotts, he was offended at the idea of its defences being breached.
Its protection was minimal.
Well, the vault we need to get into isn't empty, and I'm guessing its protection will be pretty powerful, said Harry. It belongs to the Lestranges. He saw Hermione and Ron look at each other, astonished. But there would be time enough to explain after Griphook had given his answer.
You have no chance,
said Griphook flatly.
No chance at all. If you seek beneath our floors a treasure that was never yours...
Thief, you have been warned, beware. Yeah, I know. I remember, said Harry. But I'm not trying to get myself any treasure. I'm not trying to take anything for personal gain. Can you believe that? The goblin looked slantwise at Harry, and the lightning scar on Harry's forehead prickled. But he ignored it, refusing to acknowledge its pain or its invitation.
If there was a wizard of whom I would believe that they did not seek personal gain,
said Griphook finally,
it would be you, Harry Potter. Goblins and elves are not used to the protection or the respect that you have shown this night, not from wand carriers.
Wand carriers? Repeated Harry. The phrase fell oddly upon his ears as his scar prickled, as Voldemort turned his thoughts northward, and as Harry burned to question Ollivander next door.
The right to carry a wand, said the goblin quietly, has long been contested between wizards and goblins.
Well, goblins can do magic without wands, said Ron.
That is immaterial. Wizards refuse to share the secrets of wand lore with other magical beings. They deny us the possibility of extending our powers.
Well, goblins won't share any of their magic either, said Ron. You won't tell us how to make swords and armor the way you do. Goblins know how to work metal in a way wizards have never. It doesn't matter, said Harry, noting Griphook's rising color. This isn't about wizards versus goblins or any other sort of magical creature. Griphook gave a nasty laugh.
But it is. It is about precisely that. As the Dark Lord becomes ever more powerful, your race is set still more firmly above mine. Gringotts falls under wizarding rule. House elves are slaughtered. And who amongst the wand carriers protests?
We do, said Hermione. She had sat up straight, her eyes bright.
We protest, and I'm hunted quite as much as any goblin or elf, Griphook. I'm a mudblood.
Don't call yourself, Ron muttered.
Why shouldn't I?
Said Hermione. Mudblood, and proud of it. I've got no higher position under this new order than you have, Griphook. It was me they chose to torture back at the Malfoys. As she spoke, she pulled aside the neck of the dressing gown to reveal the thin cut Bellatrix had made. Scarlet against her throat.
Did you know that it was Harry who set Dobby free? She asked. Did you know that we've wanted elves to be freed for years?
Ron fidgeted uncomfortably on the arm of Hermione's chair.
You can't want you-know-who defeated more than we do, Griphook.
The goblin gazed at Hermione with the same curiosity he had shown Harry.
What do you seek within the Lestrange's vault?
He asked abruptly.
The sword that lies inside it is a fake. This is the real one.
He looked from one to the other of them.
I think that you already know this. You asked me to lie for you back there.
But the fake sword isn't the only thing in that vault, is it? asked Harry. Perhaps you've seen the other things in there. His heart was pounding harder than ever. He redoubled his efforts to ignore the pulsing of his scar. The goblin twisted his beard around his finger again.
It is against our code to speak of the secrets of Gringotts. We are the guardians of fabulous treasures. We have a duty to the objects placed in our care, which were so often wrought by our fingers.
The goblin stroked the sword, and his black eyes roved from Harry to Hermione to Ron, and then back again.
So young,
he said finally,
to be fighting so many.
Will you help us? Said Harry. We haven't got a hope of breaking in without a goblin's help. You're our one chance.
I shall think about it,
said Griphook maddeningly.
But...
Ron started angrily. Hermione nudged him in the ribs. Thank you, said Harry. The goblin bowed his great domed head in acknowledgement, then flexed his short legs.
I think,
he said, settling himself ostentatiously upon Bill and Fleur's bed,
that the Skellingrow has finished its work. I may be able to sleep at last. Forgive me.
Yeah, of course, said Harry. But before leaving the room, he leaned forward and took the sword of Gryffindor from beside the goblin. Griphook did not protest, but Harry thought he saw resentment in the goblin's eyes as he closed the door upon him.
Little git, whispered Ron. He's enjoying keeping us hanging.
Harry, whispered Hermione, pulling them both away from the door into the middle of the still dark landing.
Are you saying what I think you're saying? Are you saying there's a Horcrux in the Lestrange's vault?
Yes, said Harry.
Bellatrix was terrified when she thought we'd been in there. She was beside herself. Why? What did she think we'd seen? What else did she think we might have taken? Something she was petrified you-know-who would find out about.
But I thought we were looking for places you-know-who's been. Places he's done something important, said Ron, looking baffled.
Was he ever inside the Lestrange's vault?
I don't know whether he was ever inside Gringotts, said Harry. He never had gold there when he was younger because nobody left him anything. He would have seen the bank from the outside, though, the first time he ever went to Diagon Alley. Harry's scar throbbed, but he ignored it. He wanted Ron and Hermione to understand about Gringotts before they spoke to Ollivander. I think he would have envied anyone who had a key to a Gringotts vault. I think he'd have seen it as a real symbol of belonging to the wizarding world. And don't forget, he trusted Bellatrix and her husband. They were his most devoted servants before he fell, and they went looking for him after he vanished. He said it the night he came back. I heard him. Harry rubbed his scar.
I don't think he'd have told Bellatrix it was a Horcrux, though.
He never told Lucius Malfoy the truth about the diary. He probably told her it was a treasured possession and asked her to place it in her vault. The safest place in the world for anything you want to hide, Hagrid told me, except for Hogwarts. When Harry had finished speaking, Ron shook his head.
You really understand him?
Bits of him, said Harry. Bits. I just wish I'd understood Dumbledore as much. But we'll see. Come on, Ollivander now. Ron and Hermione looked bewildered, but impressed as they followed him across the little landing and knocked upon the door opposite Bill and Fleur's. A weak,
"Come in,"
answered them. The Wandmaker was lying on the twin bed farthest from the window. He had been held in the cellar for more than a year, and tortured, Harry knew, on at least one occasion. He was emaciated, the bones of his face sticking out sharply against the yellowish skin. His great silver eyes seemed vast in their sunken sockets. The hands that lay upon the blanket could have belonged to a skeleton. Harry sat down on the empty bed beside Ron and Hermione. The rising sun was not visible here. The room faced the clifftop garden and the freshly dug grave. "Mr. Ollivander, I'm sorry to disturb you," Harry said.
"My dear boy,"
Ollivander's voice was feeble.
"You rescued us. I thought we would die in that place. I can never thank you, never thank you enough."
"We were glad to do it." Harry's scar throbbed. He knew, he was certain that there was hardly any time left in which to beat Voldemort to his goal, or else to attempt to thwart him.